I love when that bell goes off. Good morning. My name is Anthony. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I just want to echo what Justin said. If this is your first time with us, I hope you make yourself feel right at home. I just got back last night. I was at a family reunion in Colorado yesterday. My grandparents each come from 9 brothers and sisters. My great-grandparents each come from 8 brothers and sisters. I realized yesterday I'm related to half the state of Colorado. I met cousins I have never met before. I met cousins that I'm glad I didn't ask out in high school. Like, I was like, who are these people? My mom's like, that's your cousin, that's your cousin, that's your cousin. It was a fantastic experience. But family reunions, I mean, they're crazy. I mean, there are people that I've never met. There are people that I haven't seen in 20 years. And when you haven't seen somebody in 20 years, you forget who they are. You forget their names. You forget how you're related. It's the game that some of you guys play here on Sunday mornings. You know, you're like, I think I've seen that person before. I think I know who that person is. I'm going to pretend like I know who that person is. I'm going to shake their hand like we're best friends. But that was this. I did that to my aunt. She'll never forgive me. But a lot can happen. A lot can happen in 20 years. I mean, if you think about 20 years ago, right? 20 years ago, here's some fun facts that I pulled. 20 years ago, the Macarena by Los Del Rio was the number one song in the U.S. Independence Day was the biggest movie of the year, okay? Not the remake. Jonathan Taylor Thomas was every girl's major crush, huh? Yeah, some of you know what I'm talking about. Jay-Z, Spice Girls, and Backstreet Boys all dropped their debut albums, and everybody wanted a Tickle Me Elmo. So, you feel old yet? Think about it. 20 years ago, what were you guys doing 20 years ago? 20 years ago, where were you living? 20 years ago, what did you think you were going to be doing in 20 years? What did you think your life was going to look like? What did you think you were going to be doing? It's crazy. It's crazy to think about it. I mean, 20 years ago, I was in high school, and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. My biggest decision was whether or not I was going to ask somebody to prom. Those were the days. And if I think about it, the year 2021 will be exactly 20 years when I left Colorado. It'll be exactly 20 years, 2021. In 2001, I left to go to New York City. And just think about it. 20 years. What if I left to go to New York City and I didn't talk to my family? I didn't write my family. I didn't call my family. I didn't speak about my family. It's crazy to think about. We're in a third week of a series called The Fight. And in this, we're talking about the life of a guy named Jacob. Jacob, his whole story spans about 25 chapters of the book of Genesis. And the book of Genesis is 50 chapters long. So if you're looking at a guy whose life spans 25 chapters, it's probably important to take a look at it. And in the life of Jacob, we've been looking at all these different moments. And the reason we call it The Fight is because we see that Jacob has been fighting his whole life. He fights with God, he fights with others. And I want to encourage you, if you haven't spent the last few weeks with us, go back and listen, watch on the podcast, watch on the live stream, shout out to those who are watching that way right now. But really, it's been a really incredible process. But for today, week 3, I'm going to give you a little bit of a recap, because I think it's important going forward that we know what has happened in this series called The Fight. So pretend you're watching the series The Fight. So previously on The Fight, okay? We started and we learned that when Jacob and Esau were born, Jacob and his brother Esau were born, they were already fighting in the womb. Okay, Jacob was born to a pretty famous family, Isaac and Abraham, all right? Isaac was his father, all right? They were fighting in the womb. When Jacob was born, he was given the name Deceiver because he was grasping the heel of his brother Esau. Esau was born, he was hairy, they named him Hairy. That's what they do. They're fighting their entire life. There's nothing similar about these two. These two are at odds their entire life. In fact, their parents even picked favorites. His mom kind of preferred Jacob. His dad kind of preferred Esau. They're going back and forth. They're fighting their entire life. They're different. And the first thing we saw in week 1 is that Jacob lived up to his name Deceiver, tricked his brother out of his birthright for a bowl of stew. All right? And then he continues this process of being a deceiver. Week two, we looked at what he did when he tricked his father and his brother out of the blessing. And we learned that the blessing last week was really kind of the inheritance, what he was going to be getting. Esau found out about this. Isaac found out about this. They're angry. They're upset. Esau threatens to kill his brother Jacob. And what does Jacob do? He flees. He runs away. And for 20 years, he doesn't talk to anybody that he's related to. He doesn't talk to his family. He doesn't mention his dad. He doesn't mention his brother. And he lives away. He lives in fear. And last week, we also looked at this amazing story about when he comes in contact with God, literally wrestling with him. God changes his identity. He changes his name. And he limps away, literally limps away physically, changed, and emotionally changed for forever. So last week, we ended with this passage from Genesis 32, verses 30 through 32. It says, Jacob named this place Peniel, which means face of God. For he said, I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been spared. The sun was rising as Jacob left Peniel, and he was limping because of an injury to his hip. Even today, the people of Israel don't eat the tendon near the hip socket because of what happened that night when the man strained the tendon of Jacob's hip. So his life has changed forever, physically and eternally. And keep verse 32 on up there, because some people are like, oh, that's an interesting little tidbit that Moses decided to just throw in there at the end. This is called an authorial comment. Here's a little nerd moment for you. It's almost written for the people, because you have to think about when the book of Genesis was written for the people that were reading it. This was written for the Israelites. Think about it when you guys were in American history and you were learning about the history of America. This is exactly what happened. This is exactly what the Israelites were reading about their history. And so they were seeing this, and they saw this as literally a historical thing, and they said, oh, that's why we don't eat the tendon. Okay, cool. Let's keep going. So that's a little tidbit for you. So he's limping away. He's forever changed, right? He's walking away, but we learned early on that Esau's on his way. Esau's on his way, and Esau is supposedly still ticked, right? Jacob's scared because he's threatened his brother. His brother threatened to kill him 20 years ago, so he figures after 20 years, he's just going to be angrier and angrier and angrier, and Jacob has been trying to appease him this entire time. He's been trying to send him goats and rams and herds, and he's just saying, hey, it's your brother Jacob. I got all these gifts for you. I'm sorry what I did in the past. But it's finally time for him, after he's limping, to go visit Esau, to go face his brother, to go face his past. And at chapter 33, the top of chapter 33, right after he had this experience with God, he goes and he meets his brother face to face. After 20 years, chapter 33, verse 1 says this. Then Jacob looked up and saw Esau coming with his 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and his two servants. So here he is. He's limping away. He sees his brother with an army of 400 men. He's been fighting all night long. He's tired. He's scared. He's injured. Who knows what's going on in his mind? And sometimes when we're fearful, sometimes when we're frightened, we don't always make the best decisions. This is what he decides to do in verse 2. He put the servant wives and their children at the front, Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Joseph last. That must have been a real awkward conversation. You guys are going to go to the front lines. I'm going to make you think about it. His parents did it. His parents played favorites. I guess he was going to do it too. Verse 3 says, then Jacob went on ahead. As he approached his brother, he bowed to the ground 7 times before him. Well, I guess in a way he sort of redeems himself. He goes first. So with humility, he goes down and he bows down before Esau as almost to say, you know what? I know what I did was wrong. And I did a little research about this. The act of bowing in ancient times actually was a way to show respect and submission to the person that you're bowing to. And then I thought to myself, well, why 7 times? What's the difference about 7 times? Interestingly enough, there's even more that says in historical records revealed in the royal court of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, servants would bow down 7 times before him as a demonstration of their complete submission. Complete submission. So here he is, 20 years, hasn't seen his brother, hasn't heard from his brother. The last time these two met, Esau wanted to kill Jacob. So Jacob shows up, recognizes his wrong, kneels down, and bows before Esau and says, I'm sorry. He's finally deciding to bury this hatchet. But I can't imagine what he thinks Esau is going to do with that hatchet. And then verse 4, to Jacob's surprise, says this: "Then Esau ran to meet him and embraced him, threw his arms around his neck, and kissed him, and they both wept." Well, I didn't see that one coming. Jacob was probably a little taken back. I mean, it says that they both wept. They both burst into tears. For Jacob, that must have been tears of relief and tension as well. Oh, but think about it. 20 years have gone by. 20 years have gone by. We know that God has been working in the life of Jacob. But by this scene, the fact that Esau ran to meet him, picked him up off the ground. And remember, Esau was much bigger than Jacob. I just had this picture of Esau literally like picking up Jacob and hugging him. Thinking about it, I mean, 20 years have gone by. So we know that God has been working in Jacob's heart, but clearly by this story, we see that Jacob's working, or God is working in Esau's life as well. Time away, allowed each other's wounds to heal. And then this continues to happen. In verse 33, or chapter 33, verses 5 through 11, this is how the story continues. "That Esau looked at the woman, or looked at the women and the children, and asked, 'Who are these people with you?' 'Well, these are the children that God has graciously given to me, your servant,'" Jacob replied. "Then the servant wives came forward with the children," now that they know that they're safe, "and bowed before him. Next came Leah with her children, and they bowed before him. And finally, Joseph and Rachel came forward and bowed before him." "And what were all the flocks and herds that I met as I came?" Esau asked. "Well," Jacob replied, "they are a gift, my lord, to ensure your friendship." "My brother, I have plenty," Esau answered. "Keep what you have for yourself." But Jacob insisted, "No. If I have found favor with you, please accept this gift from me. And what a relief to see your friendly smile. It's like seeing the face of God. Please, take this gift that I have brought you, for God has been very gracious to me, and I have more than enough." And because Jacob insisted, Esau finally accepted the gifts. That's pretty great. That's pretty amazing. And people wonder, well, why did Jacob send gifts? Well, yeah, probably part of it was to try to ease the pain and to appease Esau. But it was also this custom at the time to send gifts when you, as a gift of, you know, not only as a gift of reconciliation, but also as a gift to appeasement, or maybe as a gift if you're going to visit a person, much like we do today. But the interesting thing enough here is that Jacob sent sheep and he sent goats, and all of this because Esau was a herdsman, so he wanted to add to his flock. But the crazy thing about this story is the fact that Esau accepted it. See, in this time, if you accepted the gift, that means we're good. That means we're okay. So by Esau accepting these gifts, he says, "Yeah, Jacob, we're good." After 20 years. I love this story. It's a great story of reconciliation. It's a great story to see how God is working in the life of Jacob. It's a great story to see how God is working in the life of Esau. But I wonder if you were like me when you were reading through this story, and you thought to yourself, "You know what? There's somebody like that in my life." I was reading through the story of Jacob, and I couldn't help but get to the point of reconciliation and think about the people in my life that I've hurt, the people in my life that have hurt me, something that I said or something that I did, maybe people that I haven't spoken to in 20 years, 10 years, 5 years. We call this series The Fight for a reason. Because, yeah, we're going to fight with ourselves, as we saw last week, and we're going to fight with God, as we saw last week as well. But if we're going to be honest, we're going to fight with other people as well. We're going to fight with strangers. We're going to fight with friends. We're going to fight with family. Yeah, we're going to fight with the family, our parents. We're going to fight with our grandparents. We're going to fight with our aunts, our uncles, our cousins. But Justin said it earlier. We here at Hoboken Grace, we're a family. And if we're going to be honest, we're going to fight too. There's going to be arguments. There's going to be disagreements. But it's the way we respond that's really going to show us who we serve. It's important to remember, one of the things we don't want to do is what Jacob did initially, which is he ran. He tried to avoid the situation as much as possible. And it's understandable. Esau was going to kill him. I don't necessarily want to be in the situation where somebody has threatened to kill me. But I wonder how many relationships we're avoiding because we're doing what Jacob did initially because we're imagining the worst. Because we're imagining this is the worst thing that could happen. When I was growing up, I had a really good buddy of mine. He was kind of my first comedic duo. For those of you who know me, know I love improv comedy, and I love to do comedy, and I love to make people laugh. And throughout high school, and even in middle school, there was this guy named Brett. And Brett and I were the comedic duo of Lafayette, Colorado. It's like, you know, it was like George Burns and Gracie. I don't know who was Gracie, but it was like Abbott and Costello. It was like Lucy and Desi. All right, and if you don't know who those are, shame on you. But Brett and I, we were inseparable. We were always cast in the high school shows together, and we were always trying to figure out ways to cut each other up. But our senior year of high school, we got into a huge fight, huge argument, screaming at each other, just nasty over something completely stupid, too. And we graduated. He went to the University of Nebraska. I moved here to New York, and we didn't speak to each other for 8 years. 8 years went by. We weren't even friends on Facebook anymore, which is the real, you know, sign that you're done. But we were 8 years had gone by, and we decided, you know, we didn't even talk to one another. We were so close, and yet it just broke like that. 8 years had gone by. I was cast in a show, and I had just read through another friend of a mutual friend of ours that Brett had moved to New York. He had finished his schooling, and he had moved to New York to pursue a career in the performing arts. And I said, "Oh well, good for him." And we met up where I was doing a show, and all of a sudden, one of our lead actors in the show got hurt, and he was out of the show. The artistic director was freaking out, and he came up to me and he goes, "Do you know of anybody that would be right for this role?" And I don't know, maybe it's because I just saw it on Facebook, but the first thing that came to mind was Brett. The first guy that came to mind was Brett. I'm like, Brett would be perfect for this role. And before I could even think about what I was saying, I said, "Yeah, I know a guy." And I remember pacing back and forth, thinking to myself, why did I do this to myself? I was literally like a 13-year-old boy trying to ask a girl out before he dialed the phone, you know? I was like, I'd get to like two numbers, and then I would hang it up. And then I was thinking to myself, well, what are the chances that his phone number is still the same, you know? How do I know he's not going to just hang up on me? Or how do I know he's just not going to, you know, not even pick up? He's going to see, oh, it's Anthony. Forget about him. But I remember calling him. And he picked up, and it was him. Thank goodness. And we started talking. And we kind of skirted around the subject a little bit, and I told him why, you know, I was calling him, and he said, "Oh, wow, thanks for thinking of me. That sounds awesome." But he was already committed to do another show down in Florida. He unfortunately couldn't do it. And that was my original ask. I figured, okay, we're good. We don't have to talk anymore. I asked you, right? But we kept going. We kept talking, and before you know it, we kind of talked about our little explosion in high school, and, you know, for about 30 minutes, we kept talking and said goodbye to one another. Now, are we best friends? No. I haven't talked to him on the phone since that day, but we're friends on Facebook now, so we're good. All is fine. But listen, we text each other, we send each other good notes, we're reconciled. We're not best friends, but we're good. And listen, Jacob's and Esau's story has a happy ending. Brett and Anthony's story has a happy ending. The truth is that not every broken relationship can be fixed. Sometimes it's just not going to work. You can apologize. The other person may not forgive you. We can offer forgiveness. We can repent and do everything we can to reconcile the relationship. But unless the other person responds and like forgiveness, you may not be able to reconcile. And there's a difference. There is a difference between forgiveness and reconciliation. I wrote these two definitions down. Forgiveness is a sending away, a letting go, a release, a pardon. Reconciliation is restoration, to come back into the good graces of someone, to restore to favor. That means forgiveness can be done by ourselves. But reconciliation takes both parties. And listen, throughout scriptures, there is no verse that says everybody is going to get along and we're going to sing kumbaya. That does not happen. But what it does say, and I chose two translations of this passage because I really like the way that they both lay it out. So can we get the Romans passages up there, Romans 12:18? So this is the NIV. It says, if it's possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. And the NLT says, do all that you can to live in peace with everyone. Do your part. Do your part. But sometimes we have to take the first step. I mean, if you look at the story of Jacob, he took the first step. But you might be saying, well, Anthony, I'm the one who's been hurt. I'm the one who's been wrong. They should come forward. Yeah. Yeah, they should. But guess what? Not everyone's going to do it. It is a great thing when somebody who has wronged you comes forward and says that they are wrong, but not everybody is going to do that. But I'll tell you what, Jesus says that even the offended is to take the initiative in seeking the reconciliation in the relationship. Let's look at what he says in Matthew 18, verse 15. He says, if another believer sins against you, go privately and point out the offense. If the other person listens and confesses it, you have won that person back. But here you go, people. Keep that one up there because here's the most important thing. Go privately and point out that offense. Too often, too many of us resort to our junior high school days when someone's hurt us and we go to everyone else and plead our side and try to get everybody else on our side to justify our anger and to justify our feelings, but we don't go to the person that's offended us. And that's got to stop. That has got to stop because nothing tears a family up quicker than gossip or talking behind somebody else's back. I was never good at math. I'm telling you that right now. But I do remember that the quickest way, maybe I don't remember this, straight line. What is that line? Hold on, wait here, dude. I told you I wasn't good at math. The shortest distance between two points is a straight line. It's true in math, right? I got that. You engineering Stephen students, can you agree? Yeah, okay. The shortest distance between two points is a straight line. It's true in math, but it's also true in relationships. If I go to the person and I give that person a straight line, hey, you've offended me. Or hey, I've been hurt. Or maybe it's the other way around. Listen, I know I hurt you. Listen, I know I've offended you. We gotta figure it out. We gotta go to this person because it could be just a huge misunderstanding. That's what it was for me and Brett. It was something stupid. Something completely stupid. He thought my intentions were wrong. I thought his intentions were wrong. And for 8 years, think of the comedy genius that could have happened in those 8 years. But over something stupid. That's why I always try to remember these three words: clarify, not confront. Because often we get into these encounters and we want to accuse and we want to seek revenge and we want to say, you did this to me, you did that to me. And at the end of the day, it could end up being a misunderstanding. Oh, that's not what I meant to do at all. That's not what I meant to say. I wrote this question down and I want to make sure we get it word for word. It says, could it be that some of our relationships are lived in silence because we're unwilling to take the initiative in the beginning of the process of reconciliation? We have to go. We have to reach out. We have to meet that person. We have to go to that person. And listen, I know it's the last thing you want to do. It's the last thing Jacob wanted to do. I mean, think about it. He was frightened. He was angry. He thought Esau was going to slaughter him. But he said, you know what? Enough is enough. I've got to do this. Taking that initiative. It's important. It's important in reconciliation. It's like a broken arm. All right? You can't just let it flop there. You got to pay attention to it. You got to set it. It's not just going to go away if you ignore it. Same thing with a broken relationship. You got to do something about it. Now listen, there is a disclaimer here. There is very much a disclaimer. If you've made the attempt at reconciliation and it was refused, or if you, by going to this person, you are going back into a dangerous situation, please don't go into this situation. That's not what I'm saying here. But the reason that Jacob went to Esau is because he knew that something needed to be done. Because this is something that he knew he had wronged that person. He knew that he had hurt that person. So the first thing he did is he humbled himself. Jacob goes down on his face, on his hands and knees, and he humbles himself. He realized he screwed up, and he bows 7 times. And yes, reconciliation demands humility. It's not easy. It is not easy. I was in a pretty serious relationship when I was in graduate school. It was long distance, and it ended not well at all. I was actually cheated on, and it just was not good. And I actually lost the ability to trust a lot of people for a number of years, and it kept me from being in a relationship for a very, very long time. And it just really messed me up. And about 3 or 4 years later, after that breakup, and all of that anger and the festering and everything towards this person, was building up. I was invited to a wedding, and the jerks that got married invited her too. And the jerks that got married sat us next to each other. I'm like, you don't read Facebook? We broke up. But I remember I wanted to avoid her like the plague. I didn't want anything to do with this situation at all. But I like to eat, so I had to sit down. And I remember at first we just kind of had some small talk, and it was, hey, and it was, how are you, and all that stuff. And after a while, people had gotten up to dance and all that stuff, and finally we just started to talk about it, the situation. She apologized. She said she was sorry. And it was that night that I forgave her. It wasn't a huge moment of, there wasn't angels, choirs. It wasn't, oh, we're forgiven. But I will tell you this. I really, at that moment, realized what it meant like to forgive, what a weight off your shoulders felt like. It was an incredible experience because I was able to walk into this situation and forgive. I needed to practice this sense of humility, though, because it was the last thing I wanted to do, and it was vulnerable. So the last thing I wanted to do was be vulnerable. We saw it in the story of Jacob and Esau. They wept. They wept. We used to say this in my acting days, that we emote because words are not enough. And that's what this reconciliation is all about. The story of reconciliation doesn't end with the story of Jacob. Throughout scriptures, you can see that it becomes one long story of reconciliation. The ultimate example of reconciliation is Jesus Christ. I officiated a wedding recently, and in it, there was a passage that we walked the bride and groom through because it was such a perfect illustration of what these two were going to go into in part of in being married. But it was also a great illustration of reconciliation as well. You can find it in Philippians chapter 2, verses 5 through 8. It says, you must have the same attitude that Christ Jesus had. Though he was God, he did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. Instead, he gave up his divine privileges. He took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being. When he appeared in human form, he humbled himself in obedience to God and died a criminal's death on the cross. Think about it. Christ could have came. He could have demanded that we serve him. He could have demanded that we loved him. He could have demanded that we that because he is God, this is who he is. But instead, he gave up everything that he was owed, and he served. And this is what I love about this passage. Philippians chapter 2, verse 8 says, he humbled himself in obedience to God and died a criminal's death on the cross. It's exactly, if you look at the story of Jacob, it's exactly what he did as well. First, he humbled himself, and then he went. He may not have gone to a person, but you know where he went? He went to the cross. He was beaten, he was scorned, he was name-called, he was disgraced, and did he have to? No. Did he wish to? Probably not. Did he want to reconcile us to him? Yes. Was he all in knots about it? Absolutely. Look what he prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane. This takes place just before Judas's betrayal and Jesus is arrested. Matthew 26:39 says, he went on a little farther and bowed his face to the ground, praying, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup of suffering be taken away to me, but yet I want your will to be done, not mine. See, Jesus knew that his death was going to be embarrassing. He knew that it was going to be cruel. He knew it was going to be gruesome. He knew that it was awesome. But he said, if anything else can be done, let it be done. But you know what? I want to do your will and not mine. And why did he do this? He did it for reconciliation. This whole thing of reconciliation, Jacob and Esau were reconciled to God, but Christ reconciled us to God through himself. The same way, if you look at it. He humbled himself, and he went. And we've broken our relationship with God time and time again. And when we sin, and that's not just a church word here, sin is actually relational. Anytime that we hurt somebody else, anytime that we do something that is unloving, that is what it means to sin. So when we do something that is unloving to God, that's when we sin to God. When we do something that is unloving to another person, that is when we sin to each other. Does God have to forgive us? No. He could easily hold a grudge if he wanted to. But he chose to send his son to be able to be reconciled with us. I think one of the greatest things about this story, if God is reconciled with us, maybe we can take the steps of reconciliation to do so with other people. The last thing we want to look through in the story of Jacob and Esau is the act of restitution. If you notice that he gave stuff to be able to appease this person, to be able to, he gave these herds to Esau to say, this is an act of restitution. And Esau was able to accept that and thus forgiveness. And sometimes we do that in our own fights. If I break something, I want to replace it. If we get into an accident, we want the car fixed. If somebody rips my shirt, I want them to replace this. But that's the biggest difference right here in this story of reconciliation between other people and reconciliation with God. Because God says that there is nothing that we can physically do in order to be reconciled to him. There is nothing that we can do in order to do it. The only thing that he says is believe I did what I said I did. Believe that I sent my son to die for your sins. And we're good. That's grace. That's why it's amazing. And I think the more we understand this, the more we understand that our salvation has nothing to do with our behavior. It doesn't make sense. Listen, God has been showing me what grace is more and more and more and more and more. Because that's why it's amazing. That's why it's incredible. So here's the question I have to ask you at the end of today. Who do you need to forgive? Who do you need to be reconciled to? What reunion is in store for you? Listen, we're a family here. Families are going to fight. How we respond shows who we serve. In 20 years, Jacob and Esau were changed. Where will you be in 20 years? What is it going to look like in 20 years? What are people going to say has changed in you in 20 years? This is a fight. We're in the middle of a series called The Fight. And each week we've been giving you something in order to practice, in order to grow. Think of it as training for a fight. Week one, Pastor Chris encouraged us to fast. Last week, I encouraged you to ask the question to God, God, who do you say that I am? This week, I want to encourage you to take those steps towards reconciliation. I want to encourage you to make that call, to send that message, to go see that person. And if your reconciliation right now is a reconciliation to God, I want to encourage you to take that step too. In fact, on the bottom of all the connection cards, you'll see, I want to talk to somebody about becoming a follower of Christ. Just check it. I'd love to walk you through that this week. Because Christ was sent for that purpose of reconciliation. And maybe when you reconcile to somebody this week, you can invite them next week as we continue fighting through this series. Will you pray with me? Father, it's not easy. When we think of those who have hurt us, when we think of those that we have hurt, the last thing we want to do is face it. But as we've seen in the story of Jacob and Esau, there are some times when you just come face to face with us and say, this is something that needs to be done. Last week when you wrestled with Jacob, you made him come face to face with himself. This week we learn in the life of Jacob, you made him come face to face with his past, with his family. And Father, as we think about these people in our life who have hurt us, or we think about these people that we have hurt, help us to figure out the best way we can be reconciled. And Father, when we think about our reconciliation to you, the fact that we've already been reconciled because of what Christ has done for us is amazing. So I want to ask you, for those who are worried about what they're doing and what they've done and all of that stuff, that they think they can never be reconciled to you, that this story is a story of hope. And it's a story that points them towards you. That it doesn't matter what we've done, that it doesn't matter where we've been, but that you are pursuing us, that you are pursuing us in this beautiful story of reconciliation. I pray for each and every person that comes in contact and wrestles with this week. And I'm excited to see how you're going to use it. It's in Jesus' name we pray.